This is the View from Apollo podcast, an ongoing conversation on alternative investing, economics, and the trends shaping up financial markets.
Volatility levels are rising, and correlation among asset classes is making traditional portfolio diversification techniques less effective. In this episode of The View from Apollo, Apollo partner Matt O'Mara discusses how alternative investments can make investment portfolios more resilient to the negative impacts of market volatility.
With rising levels of correlation likely to result in higher volatility, we're less confident that public markets alone will be able to provide the same high-quality experience that investors have come to expect.
In a wide-ranging conversation with Apollo's chief economist, Torsten Slok, Matt traces the recent performance of the 60-40 portfolio, examines how trends like rising correlation among asset classes and increased concentration in equity markets could be leaving investors more exposed to volatility risk, and discusses how adding alternative asset classes with a focus on investment factors such as cash flow generation and valuation can make portfolios more resilient. So, without any further ado, let's get started.
Hello, everyone. I'm your host, Torsten Slok, Chief Economist at Apollo, and you're listening to the View from Apollo podcast. My guest today is Matt O'Mara. Matt is a partner in the Insurance Solutions Group here at Apollo and has a broad perspective of credit markets and private markets, including both equity and credit. Today he's here to share his thoughts about what he sees as a growing risk, the diminished effectiveness of some of the most important traditional techniques investors use to diversify their portfolios, and to discuss how investors can respond to that trend by using alternative assets to help protect their portfolios against rising levels of volatility. So Matt, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks, Torsten. It's great to be here again.
Well, it's my pleasure to speak with you. Matt, so you recently published a white paper making some points that I found very provocative. You make the case that increased correlations among asset classes are undermining the effectiveness of the 60-40 portfolio, which has been, of course, the default construction that millions of investors have used to diversify their investments and seek protection against volatility. Now, the reason I found this paper so timely is that I believe, and Apollo as a firm believes, that markets are in store for more volatility going forward. So if I may, I'd just like to set the stage for our discussion by talking for a few moments about why we expect volatility levels to remain elevated for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, that sounds great, Torsten.
Okay, so the backdrop, of course, for financial markets and macro at the moment is that inflation simply remains too high. And with inflation still being too high at around 3.5%, significantly still above the Fed's 2% inflation target, the challenge for markets and the challenge for investors continues to be that rates are likely to stay higher for longer. And if we have rates higher for longer, we know the debate that we had in 2023 when rates higher for longer meant that there was a lot of worries about that high interest rates could ultimately result in a recession. We have not seen any sign of a recession so far, and the most likely scenario at this point continues to be that we will have a soft landing. But for markets, obviously, that have been rallying a lot, both in equities and in credit, this continues to mean that there are elevated risks of more volatility, both in credit and in equity markets over the next several years. And therefore, this higher for longer environment, it still brings along this debate about what are the implications for investors and what are the implications for how you control risk and how you minimize the volatility of your portfolio. So with that economic scenario as a backdrop, maybe Matt, can you start off by explaining why are you concerned about how these elevated volatility levels might impact investors?
Sure. And thanks for the analysis, Torsten. You've obviously been, you know, in the higher for longer camp for a long time, and the last couple of weeks have added firepower to that. But, you know, there are reasons why we should expect different and a potentially more challenging market in the future than we've had in the relatively recent past, you know, certainly over the last 15 or 20 years. And it really starts like if we start thinking about the 60-40 portfolio. The 60-40 portfolio is sort of the standard, you know, genericized way of thinking about portfolio construction. And it's a reference to your portfolio allocation of 60% public equities and 40% public fixed income. the general thought being that investors can get their returns from the 60% of public equities, and then they can get income and safety from the fixed income portion. And investors have gravitated towards the 60-40 portfolio because it's simple, somewhat intuitive, and really just because it's worked, or at least it has worked. One of the reasons why it's worked is that there's generally an inverse correlation between stocks and bonds, and that inverse correlation gets stronger in times of stress. So what do I mean by that? That's to say that, you know, between 1977 and 2021, there's lots of years where both stocks and bonds had positive performance. But in any of those years where either stocks were down or bonds were down, the other one had positive performance. There was never a year where both were negative. And so they offset that downside volatility. And that pattern held through 9 years in which one of them were down or the other, spanning six of the economic recessions, including, you know, sort of the large drawdown in dot-com and the global financial crisis. So what's changing about that is, you know, the Fed started rising interest rates. The sudden shift in policy resulted in 2022 an 18% negative return for equities, a 13% negative return for fixed income. It was the first year on record in which both asset classes, you know, delivered not only negative returns, but double-digit negative returns. And obviously the 60-40 portfolio at minus 16% was painful for investors. So the concern is that if that correlation, or rather than inverse correlation between stocks and bonds persists, you know, what we saw in 22, we saw, you know, highly correlated in 2023 also, but to the upside, if that correlation persists, then it will likely undermine the volatility dampening nature of the 60-40 model, which investors have grown accustomed to, and will leave them increasingly exposed to volatility.
Yeah, and in your paper, you mentioned some other trends in the market that could push volatility levels higher going forward. Can you talk about what those other trends are?
Yeah, I think the biggest one really relates to the 60% of the portfolio that's public equities. And in particular, it's the concentration of the stock market. So if you look back in the late part of the 20th century, there were, you know, roughly speaking, 8,000 public companies. Now there are less than 4,000. The S&P 500 as a percentage of global stock markets is now 80%. So 80% of global stock markets can be explained by the S&P 500. And then within the S&P, the top five stocks make up about a quarter, sometimes over a quarter of that index. And if we look at 2023, the performance of the Magnificent Seven, the seven largest stocks, they've dramatically outpaced that of the rest of the market and have accounted for an increasingly large portion of the gains. In 2023, the overall S&P 500 index was up 26%, but the S&P 493, that's the 500 minus the 7, was down year to date all the way into the fourth quarter. And of course, the Magnificent 7 had a PE ratio of about 50 times. So if you're thinking about the 60-40 portfolio, that 60% is likely to be increasingly concentrated. And, you know, more problematic is increasingly concentrated among a handful of highly valued stocks. So overall, with rising levels of correlation, which we talked about, and concentration likely to result in higher volatility. And so we're less confident that public markets alone will be able to provide the same high quality experience that investors have come to expect, meaning going forward, the ride, you know, might get a little bumpier.
Well, and if that's the case, then how can investors manage volatility and minimize downside risk in this new environment?
So we believe that adding, you know, uncorrelated or less correlated alternative asset classes can help. And it'll help it by enhancing the diversification benefits, and then also potentially by minimizing downside risk and portfolio volatility. So historic data shows that by adding an allocation to private assets, so replacing some of the publics for private assets, can improve risk-adjusted returns. And, you know, just by adding a relatively modest portion, it, you know, will push up the efficient frontier, push it up and to the left, meaning that you can get better returns per unit of risk. And by doing so, the you know, effectively the idea is to trade some level of volatility risk. So you're reducing volatility, but, you know, arguably increasing illiquidity or illiquidity risks somewhat.
But if we're talking specifically about volatility protection, I mean, isn't it true that not all alternative assets are good at protecting against volatility?
Yeah, sure. That's right. So we think the line between public and private is blurring. I think that everyone can appreciate that there are risky public assets and there are safer public assets. It's no different in private markets. Some assets are riskier, some are safer. You know, it's also true that some private assets can be liquid and, you know, there are changes going on with market structures that are making, you know, large part of public markets less liquid. So there's a little bit of a blurring, and we think recognizing this and broadening the investor universe to include both public and private investments makes sense. And as you broaden that universe, as you do that, it's important to recognize that not all alternatives are the same. So to minimize volatility, you have to add alternatives that have the right characteristics to be more resilient in the face of those risks.
So specifically, then, how should investors approach investment selection in private markets, in your view?
It starts off with a process that's very similar to how you'd start off in the first place. It's about identifying the investment objective and the risk to the objective. And then it comes down to selecting the portfolio of investments that will mitigate that risk and maximize the likelihood of satisfying your objective. As investors do this, they should think about applying the same factor investing dynamics to their portfolio construction framework as has become common in the public segment. So for example, you know, within public markets, most investors are familiar with the concepts of growth and value and can appreciate that there's a cyclical pattern that swings between each of those and one being more favored at any particular time. We think that same phenomenon exists within private markets as well. And for that reason, we believe it should adopt what we call a factor-aware approach when they're selecting investments, not only in the public markets, which has become common, but also in private markets.
Well, and you and I have been discussing this in great detail, including more recently. So maybe can you expand on what you mean by a factor-aware approach?
Sure. Yeah, no, it's become topical, I think, not just here in the halls of Apollo, but I think also in the marketplaces, people really start to dive into alternatives and understand how different alternative asset classes behave in different markets. But what we mean by factor aware is, you know, investors should be cognizant of the potential impact of investment factors in private markets, and they should seek out assets that provide exposures to factors that they see as most beneficial to the portfolio as a whole. So specifically, when we're thinking about factors that stand out as a result of their potential to lower volatility, we are thinking about one, the investment's ability to generate cash flow, and then two, paying close attention to valuation. And so we think it's really like investors who employ a selection process that begins, you know, again, either by identifying assets with strong cash flows or screening for purchase price. And that type of process can maximize the volatility dampening effect of an alt's portfolio. On the other hand, investments that are focused on opportunities that rely on directional bets related to growth, while they may play out well and get good performance, they're unlikely to dampen volatility, particularly in the current environment, which we talked about, of higher borrowing costs, higher rates for longer.
Okay, so let's talk about those two points, cash flow and valuation in turn here. So maybe first talk to us a little bit about what is the importance of cash flows.
Yeah, so cash flows, I mean, it really boils down, you know, to the old adage of a bird in the hand is worth two in the bush. The certainty of cash flows today is more valuable than the promise of cash flows in the future. You know, if a company makes a dollar, it can pay that dollar to shareholders, or it can choose to invest in some growth projects. And of course, as an investor, I prefer the dollar today versus, you know, a dollar that's generated by that project and, you know, is subject to all sorts of risks along the way. The other element of cash flows, of course, is that investment opportunities that pay out dividends and cash flows tend to be less sensitive to changes in interest rates. We often use the word duration to describe, you know, this interest rate sensitivity. And so cash flowing, you know, cash paying investments, you know, have lower interest rate sensitivity or have lower duration than non-cash paying, and all things equal, lower duration assets will be less volatile than opportunities with higher duration, particularly in environments of changing rates. You know, just to sort of to further that cash flow commentary, if you look at public markets, the top 50 cash flow generators in the S&P 500 have actually outperformed the overall index in almost every year since 2000. So if you, in each of those years, if you took the top 50 cash flow generators, compared it to the index, the portfolio of 50 will have outperformed. And we think the dynamics are similar in private markets as well. You know, sort of on a smaller scale basis, if you look back at the performance in the market in 2022, as interest rates rose, it was really those higher duration assets, the ones that pay less cash flow, or the ones that pay cash flow further out in the future, including venture capital, growth investments, long-term bonds. It was those assets that suffered the largest decline in value in 2022 as interest rates rose. So as a result, you know, a healthy allocation of cash flow generating alternative assets really can help make portfolios more resilient to volatility.
So with that factor aware approach and the two factors being cash flow generating assets and valuation, as you and I often talk about here at Apollo, our slogan is purchase price matters. So let's talk about value. I mean, when you think about value and valuation, can you expand on how you include that in your analysis when you think about the dampening volatility in your portfolios?
Yeah. So we talked about cash flow. You know, given two equal opportunities, you know, you'd rather have cash flow sooner rather than later. As you start to evaluate, you know, opportunities that have differing levels of cash flow at differing times, it's not just enough to say, you know, I want cash flow sooner. It's really also, you know, you also have to think about the price paid for those cash flows. And so, you know, if we think about the period of historically low interest rates from the end of the GFC to the beginning of 2022, the cost of financing growth projects or the opportunity cost of waiting for growth to materialize was artificially low, right? Rates were near zero. So the difference between accepting a dollar today and accepting a dollar in the future was artificially low. You know, rates were near zero. And as a result, many alternatives managers increased their focus on growth potential and de-emphasized cash flows, near-term cash flows as a priority in their investment selection process. And by the way, they were right to do so. Like returns from 2009 to 2022 in, you know, growth strategies and venture strategies, they were amazing. But what happened along the way is that, you know, more money chased that growth. And as a result, that growth became more expensive. Valuations crept up over the period. And some of those valuations are still quite high. Just, you know, you can look at the PE ratios of the Magnificent Seven as an example. Like their public market counterparts, private market investors also over this period relied on multiple expansion as a key component of their alpha generation in their investment strategy. As a result, many investors have, you know, either consciously or unconsciously built private market portfolios that are heavily weighted towards growth. And those portfolios that are weighted towards growth could leave investors more exposed to volatility. And so in the period of higher interest rates, you know, it's just becoming clearer now, as you know, from your preamble, that interest rates will be higher for longer. You know, the cost and the risk associated with growth projects has increased. The valuation continues to be high. It just seems unlikely that growth will continue to experience outsized returns. And certainly, you know, less likely enough that a stronger conscious lean towards value makes a lot of sense at this moment.
Well, that makes complete sense, because with rates higher for longer, interest expenses for firms and projects will, of course, continue to also be higher for longer. So that does require a solid stream of cash flow to cover those interest expenses. In other words, it requires coverage ratios that generally are higher when rates are going to be higher for longer. So if investment factors like these play a role in private markets, what does that mean for investors? How should they be thinking about this cyclicality?
Yeah, great question. In the short term, you know, the macroeconomic trends we discussed suggest strongly that conditions that enabled investors to capitalize on growth and momentum approaches are no longer in place. Over the longer term, we think that a focus on value will create opportunities for reliable and repeatable alpha generation at lower levels of volatility. So in other words, you've already said it, you know, purchase price matters, and purchase price matters in private markets, just as it does in public markets. And it's critical for investors to avoid, you know, overpriced assets. It's the one thing in a transaction or an investment that you can't change. You can always change, you know, management and business model and structure, but, you know, the purchase price is permanent. And so in any market environment, avoiding overpriced assets is critical. And certainly as the market adjusts to new rates, it's going to be an important aspect over the next couple of years.
Well, that's really fascinating, Matt. So thanks so much. As we get closer to our allotted time here, I want to introduce what has become a tradition here on the podcast. We call it a personal recommendation. which is basically a question about what you do when you're not focused on investing and managing volatility and portfolio construction. So what have you been doing more recently when you haven't been thinking about the factors here, of course, of cash flow generating assets and value?
Well, that's a trick question, Torsten, because I'm always thinking about alternative investments.
I know you are.
Recently, I just finished this mini series on Apple TV called Masters of the Air. And it was just a really well done, engaging show. You know, talked about, you know, the bomb squad of bomber pilots in World War II. And, you know, I watched the whole series. I actually had no idea it was based on a true story until the last episode. It's one of these stories that, you know, first conveys the horror of war and doesn't sugarcoat it. But then it also tells the story of, you know, just normal people rising to the occasion in tough circumstances and just doing amazing things. And again, it was really well done and engaging, and, you know, recommend anyone who's interested in, certainly in World War II, watch it.
Well, my recommendation is also something from Apple TV, and we didn't even talk about this before. I've been watching The Morning Show, which is just a really great drama, very relevant and very interesting. And I watched that together with my lovely wife and kids. And it's just really fascinating the way that this has been put together and the way the story has been told. So, well, this has been a fascinating discussion, Matt. It's great to hear your views. I know you've been on the podcast before. We greatly appreciate that you take time out of your busy schedule to talk to us about the 60-40 portfolios and strategies for managing volatility, and of course also the role of investment factors in private markets. So thanks so much for talking to us today. I should also highlight that on apolloacademy.com, Matt's paper is available for download, Building Resilience, Selecting the Right Assets for an Alternatives Portfolio. So thanks very much, Matt, and thanks very much to everyone for listening.
Thanks for having me, Torsten. It's always great to be on the pod.
This podcast was recorded on April the 25th, 2024.
Thanks for listening. A quick reminder that you can subscribe to this podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Audible, or by visiting apolloacademy.com, our educational website dedicated to alternative investing, where you can also sign up to have Torsten's Daily Spark economic blog delivered directly to your inbox. Once again, thanks for listening.
Apollo Global Management Incorporated, together with its subsidiaries, Apollo, makes no representation or warranty, expressed or implied, with respect to the accuracy, reasonableness, or completeness of any of the statements made during this podcast, including, but not limited to, statements obtained from third parties. Opinions, estimates, and projections constitute the current judgment of the speaker as of the date indicated. They do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Apollo and are subject to change at any time without notice. Apollo does not have any responsibility to update this podcast to account for such changes. There can be no assurance that any trends discussed during this podcast will continue. Statements made throughout this podcast are not intended to provide and should not be relied upon for accounting, legal, or tax advice and do not constitute an investment recommendation or investment advice. Investors should make an independent investigation of the information discussed during this podcast, including consulting their tax, legal, accounting, or other advisors about such information. Apollo does not act for you and is not responsible for providing you with the protections afforded to its clients. This podcast does not constitute an offer to sell or the solicitation of an offer to buy any security, product, or service, including interest in any investment product or fund or account managed or advised by Apollo. Certain statements made throughout this podcast may be forward-looking in nature. Due to various risks and uncertainties, actual events or results may differ materially from those reflected or contemplated in such forward-looking information. As such, undue reliance should not be placed on such statements. Forward-looking statements may be identified by the use of terminology including, but not limited to, may, will, should, expect, anticipate, target, project, estimate, intend, continue, or believe, or the negatives thereof, or other variations thereon, or comparable terminology.